I remember years ago, Bill Littlefield, who...
Yeah, he does WBUR.
But he's also a professor at Curry College.
Yeah.
And at Harvard.
Yeah.
And he was writing a baseball fiction story called The Scout, and he did.
Uh-huh.
But while he was doing it, somebody gave him my name, and he wanted more. He called me up. He says, gee, Mr. Merlo, I'm writing a book and so forth, so, and I got to pick up some baseball lingo. That's just the way he put it.
Yeah.
I says, well, how can I help? He said, well, they tell me you're the guy to talk to. You've been in baseball all your life. You got to have a little lingo that I can incorporate. So I said, well, why don't you come on over the house? We had a great time. Great time. He had more stories than I had to tell. But he's really a baseball fan.
Oh, he's a great guy. I listen to his show all the time. Yeah. I read his books. And, but just by way of introduction, this is Paul Matick. I'm a member of the Sabre Oral History Committee, and I'm here with Len Merulo to capture his biography and some stories that he has to tell with us. Len played with the Cubs in the 40s and played on a World Series team in 45, and then he was the chief scout for them. So I guess we're off and running. So
very good.
Len, first of all, I know you grew up in you were born in the Boston area, and let's see, how did you get interested in baseball? What did you do as a kid? And
well, that's a story in itself. You know, I'm one of these fellows that is around the Boston area, and every time there's a Little League affair or a Babe Ruth affair or an American Legion affair, banquet, or a dinner of some sorts, exchange group, and so forth and so on, they contact the Red Sox, hoping that they can get a speaker at one of their dinners or banquets. Yeah. And failing to do that, someone will say, well, there's a nice guy up in Reading, an Italian fellow. I can't even remember his name. But he'd be glad to come over and give a little talk on baseball. And I always tell him right off the bat, when I was a player, they were always pinch hitting for me. So as a speaker now, I'm pinch hitting for some of the biggest names in baseball because either they cost too much money or they're unavailable.
Right,
so
right.
I grew up in East Boston, up near the racetrack, Byron Street. My family's still there. I still have a family there in East Boston. And those typical kids, all nationalities, in the
were your parents immigrants?
Oh yes, they came right from Italy.
First generation.
And of course, baseball, football, track, or anything like that wasn't their game. The word in our house was zappa, in Italian. That means go to work as soon as you can, because I was one of 12 children, 9 boys and 3 girls.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and we're a very, very close family.
Were you the oldest?
I always wrongfully say right in the middle. I was the 8th child.
Okay.
So how can you be in the middle?
Close enough.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the way I grew up. And we had so many kids. We had the Irish, we had the Swedes, we had the Finns, we had the Germans, we had the Polish kids. Mixed, great neighborhood, and it's still the same way. Byron Street. I went to Paul Jones Primary School, primary grades, kindergarten through the 4th grade. It is now Dominic Savio Prep.
Okay, the high school.
That's the location that I was brought up in.
All right.
Whatever was in season, we kids would be out playing. Basketball, we'd have a fruit basket nailed to the telegraph pole with a hole in it. We'd play basketball. Football season, we'd stuff anything and use that as a football. Baseball, hey, if the 36 kids showed up, we had 18 on a side.
Right.
And we're going all the time. Stickball, we call it.
But
my mother never could understand how we could spend so much time on the street playing ball. And never could, you know, not understanding, not following sports or anything. And my father just worked. So that was
These were primarily pickup games.
Yeah, just as kids. Yeah. As kids. But we were doing it.
Now, when did you start to play organized ball? When you went to high school, or?
Well, I was one of these kids, unfortunately, was in my senior year in high school. All through my senior year, I was 15 years old in my senior year in high school. Now, that's unbelievable.
It is,
true.
Yeah.
And I had a sister in the same situation. And I think if you're a good youngster, took care of yourself and did everything what the teacher asked you, come down and shovel the snow and clean the blackboards, and were a good student. And in those days, you knew that you were a pretty good student is the way you sat in your class. Now, the kid in the first row in the first seat, he was supposed to be the leader in the class.
Yeah.
Academically.
Uh-huh.
I was a number two kid in the fifth grade, the second. Uh-huh. And they had me go from the fifth to the seventh grade. I was never in the sixth grade.
Oh, okay. You skipped,
and I
yeah.
have to play sports, but I yeah. was, you know, all my pals were always behind me, the kids that, you know, so
sure.
I was a little ahead of them.
Yeah.
So I wound up my senior year, 15-year-old captain of baseball.
Wow.
In my senior year in high school. Of course, I was always
East
playing.
Boston
I could
high
run
school.
And throw with anybody.
East Boston High School?
East Boston yeah. High School.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in my senior year in high school, a newspaper man was a bird dog for the Cubs, Ralph Wheeler. Everybody knew Ralph Wheeler. He was a little guy, high-cut pant legs.
Uh-huh.
We used to laugh at him when we saw him. Suspenders, a bachelor. He owned and operated the Suburban League. He ran the Marlin City Club. He was Mr. Baseball.
I see.
And he covered schoolboy sports.
For which paper did he work for?
Boston Herald. He was a schoolboy, eventually, for many years, schoolboy sports editor.
Yeah.
And Eddie Costello was the senior editor. Burt Whitman, all those are famous names in sports.
That's before my time.
Eddie Costello was Ted Williams' best friend.
I see.
Of all the baseball people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that was the atmosphere as a kid. Now, Ralph Wheeler, I didn't finish my story.
Yeah.
He was at one of my ball games in high school. And I know who he was. Any kid that had a baseball uniform on knew who Ralph Wheeler was.
Did you know he was looking at you? Or
No, I didn't know, but I saw him at the ball game naturally.
Yeah.
You know, he was at one of the ball, he's getting the lineups, and at a ball game. And we knew that he ran the Suburban League, and he did an awful lot for a lot of youngsters as far as getting them squared away in school, getting them a scholarship and things like that. He was very, very heavily involved with every youngster, a lot of youngsters.
Yeah.
And he came up to me after the game, and he said to me, what course are you taking? And I thought that was a, what a question to ask. Hey, here I'm hoping he's saying, hey, you played a good ball game. He said, what course are you taking? And just to show you the type of man he was, and I very proudly said, a commercial course. He said, that's too bad. I said, why? He said, you can't get into college with a commercial course. You don't have any college credits or enough college credits. I said, I'm not going. Seriously, I said, oh, I'm not going to college. He said, yes, you are. He said, I am. He said, yes. He said, I'm going to come over and talk to your mother and father. He said, I wish you wouldn't do that. He said, why not? I said, they'll throw you out of the house, because we had nobody in the family ever went to college. As soon as they were old enough, they would school and go to work. They used to call it continuation school back in those days. You could take courses to get a high school diploma.
Oh, yeah.
But he did, and they almost threw him out of the house because they couldn't understand. Now, he's got to be like his brothers and his sisters. He goes to, he's going to go to work. He convinced them. And in those days, it cost $600 to go to St. John's Prep. That's room, board, and tuition. $600.
That was big bucks.
That was big bucks.
Yeah. And that was in Danvers?
And my,
was it in Danvers then? Or it's,
in
it's
Danvers.
In Danvers.
Oh, yeah,
now.
Danvers.
Okay.
But St. John's Prep at that time, it was a prep school, preparatory school, not as it is now. You go to St. John's Prep for 4 years now, just like you go to high school.
Right, now
but
it's
they
high
also
school.
Had postgraduates.
Right.
And I was a postgraduate at St. John's Prep.
Oh, okay.
But when he mentioned, he said, I can see to it that he you know, can get a scholarship to St. John's Prep. So my oldest brother was there, and he says, well, how much is a scholarship going to cost? He says, well, maybe I can get him, you know, get him $300, you know, go to, yeah. You stay at the prep and so forth. And of course, my mother and father, right then and there, they're not interested. $300, right. Where's that going to come from?
Yeah.
And that was my scholarship, $300 at St. John's Prep, paid. Paid. In other words, I had a $300, but it was prepaid.
Uh-huh, I see.
And I didn't find out until years later it was Ralph Wheeler that paid it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a nice...
Yeah. So anyway, nice I went gym. To St. John's Prep and played at St. John's Prep, and from there I got a scholarship to Villanova.
So you played at St. John's Prep for what, a couple of years?
Just a couple of years. A
couple of years, yeah. Okay.
And played down the Cape my first year while I was at St. John's Prep. Now I'm still only 16.
Wow.
And then 17 years old, I played down in the Cape Breton Colliery League, because the Cape Cod League, they were able to have even high school boys, prep school boys, college boys, ex-pros. That's what the Cape Cod League was then in those days, the 1935, 36, 37.
Okay.
This is before the NCAA and,
right.
And what before
okay.
Came today.
Okay.
But we got $10 a week board and room. And we all lived in what they call a boarding house, which was owned by the Cook family right in Hyannis. But the name of the team was Barnstable.
Okay.
Right on South Street. The home was there, still beautiful. And we all lived, most of us together. Some of the college boys, a little older, were able to live with families or something like that. But we all lived together like a boarding house.
Yeah.
And we were allowed to go to the Mayflower restaurant. Get our meals, 3 meals a day, $10 a week. It was great.
Yeah.
And you could save $9 of it. You
know, sure,
you got to go to the movies, paid.
Did you? What kind of work did you have to do?
No work.
No work.
No,
I see.
See, the NCAA was not involved. All we did was play ball.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you got a chance to go to the beach, there's always families doing things for you, entertaining you, things like that. Right.
So this was okay with your family as long as you were...
it didn't cost them anything.
Yeah, they were bringing even saving money.
But from that day on, when I didn't go to work, there were always... My mother could... And I remember telling different groups, every time I'd come home, I wouldn't be home maybe 2 or 3 days at a time. I was jumping from one school to another or from one class to another.
Yeah.
Like I got home from the Cape to go to Villanova.
Yeah.
Come home from the Cape to go another year to the prep, but I'd only be a few days, and every time I come home, my mother would say to me in Italian, "Quando la digo? When are you going to go to work?" In other words, I'm wasting my time.
Exactly, yeah.
See? She couldn't understand that.
Yeah.
While the others in the family were all bringing their little, you know, pay home. And, and when they all got there.
Did any of your brothers play... sports or baseball or like
they all played. They all played, and but my brother Manny, who was behind me, he went to East Boston High School, was captain of three sports, got a scholarship to Bridgeton Academy, and then
made.
He got a scholarship to Holy Cross. He was captain. He just died the other day, and then he got a scholarship to. Holy Cross. He was captain of baseball, Holy Cross, class of 42. That was my brother, Emmanuel.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he was the only one that played as far as college sports. He didn't get an opportunity to go into professional baseball. You know, he was a shortstop, second baseman, but he played second base at Holy Cross.
Yeah.
Played with a lot of the big-name Holy Cross people. And he was in that same class as the Coconut Grove bunch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they had the big fire in Boston College. Oh, yeah, that was really a tragedy.
Well, Holy Cross upset Boston College, you know. You heard that story.
Right, yes.
All the BC players were going to go to, many of them were going to, invited to go to the Coconut Grove to celebrate their victory, because they were easy choice to beat Holy Cross. But Holy Cross upset them. Johnny Bazemas, who later became Peabody High School athletic director for many, many years, baseball coach, Great quarterback. He beat BC.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So you ended up getting a scholarship to Villanova then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It never cost my family one dime to.
How did you get hooked up with Villanova? Again, somebody, their baseball coach?
Yeah, again, I'm sure Ralph Wheeler was behind it all. He helped me. He was a story in itself.
Yeah. Okay.
Because of the help he's given to the great Holy Cross basketball players. So
Ronnie Perry?
Ronnie Perry. He was one of his proteges, but many, many fellows. Eddie Wakis and I signed with the Cubs. Ralph Wheeler, he was one of Ralph Wheeler's boys.
Okay.
Eddie Wakis. Never go to college.
He was not from around here, was he?
Cambridge.
Oh, he was?
Oh, yeah. And with the three of us together, Ralph signed and made a reputation for himself because all three of us went to the major leagues. The other one was Bonnie Olson from Everett, who died a young man, should have been the best of the three of us.
Okay, I'm familiar with Wakis because of the he got shot by that woman at one time. In
Oh, Eddie Wakis. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not familiar with Olson.
Yeah.
Okay. Bonnie. So you spent 4 years at Villanova then?
No, I spent three and a half.
Three and a half, okay.
That's another story in itself. Back in those days, the scouts operated differently. They, no draft naturally.
Right.
Draft didn't come along until 1965.
Yeah.
But back in those days, we were heavily scouted by, ball clubs didn't have many scouts. They did not have many scouts, but they had a lot of contacts and things like that. But I played in the Cape, played way down in Cape Breton, Island, Nova Scotia, which one of the nicest summers I ever spent. The people down there were just wonderful.
Yeah.
And loved it.
Uh-huh.
Nothing else to do but work in the coal mines and on a fishing schooner or something like that and watch the baseball games.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And but anyway, we lived with families down there. But see, why we didn't go back to Cape League, because if you went to Nova Scotia, hey, we got $45 a week, and American money was 10% more than that, even more than that. They were able to pay you.
Wow.
We had players come from all over the country, down in Canada to play. But after that, it was played up in the Northern League. See, the Cape Cod League never really progressed as far as these other, the Northern League was a great league. We traveled by bus, just like the professionals. And I played for Burlington, the Queen City.
Burlington, Vermont?
Yeah, and we packed that ballpark every day.
Who else was in that league?
Oh, many, many, many major leaguers. On my ball club, Rosie Waugh, signed by the Yankees, pitched with the Yankees. Buddy Matheny, the center fielder, played with the Yankees. And they named even the stadium after him, after he coached for many, many years at the school in Virginia. Hank Barowe, Georgie Sternweiss.
You played with, the Cubs.
He went to Fordham University.
Yeah.
And he was probably one of the reasons why my story on 3.5 years at Villanova. Many, many players in the Northern League went to the.
Okay.
And we had some good managers, good coaches.
Anyway, 3.5 years at Villanova, they came along and they signed you to a...
What would happen, and I had a scout from the Cubs, because I used to work out with the Cubs. If I was home, if the Cubs were in Boston, Ralph Wheeler would have me at Braves Field. He was a great pal of Charlie Grimm's, a great pal of Red Corridan, a great pal of Roy Johnson, the two coaches on the ball club. He loved those Cubs, Ralph Wheeler. He loved the Cubs. Gabby Hartnett was the catcher back in those. And he was from Millville, right on the Rhode Island line in Massachusetts. But he was a great fan of Gabby Hartnett. Gabby made a lot of him when he was a player, and a great player with the Cubs. So we got very close, and that's how he got bringing youngsters who thought were good ball players. See, he had the best ball club in the Suburban League, which is now the Intercity. That's the Intercity League today, but it used to be the Suburban League. And when Ralph died, I succeeded him as the president of the Suburban League.
I see.
Just in more... all the committees did most of the work, and now in name only, because of my connection with Ralph. And I continued to get Ralph the old Chicago farm team uniforms for his Marlin City Club. But he had the best players, and the rest of the teams didn't pay their players. But Ralph, he enticed them to come to play with him because he could get them some print in the sports pages. And he could do a lot for them in that way, in that manner, because you connected with the Major League Ball Club and things like that. So he always had the best teams.
Anyway, what? So you, it's strange that the Braves didn't have a stronger connection to you.
Well, being a local team,
you know, they had the two local teams.
Yeah, in fact, my growing up, we were not Braves fans. I was a Braves fan, always was a National League fan. I could still name you, and I still go to the Braves reunion every year at the Holiday Inn in Brookline.
Yeah.
And they invite me every year.
Yeah.
The Braves, the Cubs were the Cubs. They used to win the pennant every 3 years. They were like the Yankees in the National League back in those days. So naturally, and my favorite ball player was Billy Jurgis, the shortstop. Okay. I copied everything he did unknowingly, put the gum on the top of my cap and things like that. I even hit like him, unfortunately, copying his style. But that's what kids are. Kids want to be Gasciaparra. They want to be Gasciaparra.
Exactly.
They want to be a Yastrzemski. Remember, started that holding that bat way up high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So when you signed with the Cubs, did you?
What happened? I started to say in my junior year at Villanova, I was a pretty good student. In other words, I did my work, and I would have graduated on time and all that, but I still loved baseball. Now, I was the captain-elect coming up. And then just after the Thanksgiving, I never came home at Thanksgiving. I wouldn't come home but once a year. It's Christmas time. That was just outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, sure. That's
in those days,
that
was a
long
way.
Yeah,
and most of the time when we did come home, we'd thumb home.
You couldn't afford to
the
do
train fare was, So, anyway, I got a telegram from Clarence Rowland.
Clarence
Rowland. If you do some research, you know who Clarence Rowland is.
He was the president of the Pacific Coast League, I think.
After,
later. Okay.
Prior to that, he was like the baseball man in the Cubs office. Did a lot of goodwill work and things like that.
Okay.
And he was working in, more or less an assistant to Mr. Wrigley, who really didn't take part in baseball. He liked baseball, but he wasn't a public figure. He kind of always stayed in the background. And a wonderful, wonderful person, great family.
Yeah.
I got a telegram from him, and the way the telegram read, Mr. Wrigley would like to have you come to Chicago to visit with him prior to your going home. We will send you a train ticket, okay? We want you in Chicago on such and such a date. Do not say anything to anybody. This is something that's going to benefit you, but you must not say anything to anybody. This is the way they used to do it.
Wow. Very secretive.
But imagine getting a telegram
from
Clarence Rowland.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't even tell my roommate.
Yeah.
My roommate and I were very, very, very close, so I took off for Chicago. Prior to, and then they would have a train ticket for me on the New England States, which was a very popular train, to Boston.
I see.
And then I'd be able to go back to school.
I see.
He said, but you will be in Chicago for 2 days. We will meet you at LaSalle Street, Union Station. And I did. When I got to Union Station, Bill Veeck Jr., who was 23 years old at the time, wow, working as a clerk in the mm-hmm. Cubs office, mm-hmm. and Mr. Rowland mm-hmm. met me at the station. Now, wow, you can just imagine. I borrowed my roommate's trench coat. They call it a trench coat.
Yeah.
Like a half a raincoat. Every, see,
what are you, 20 years old now? Something like that?
Yeah. 20, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And but anyway, they met me at the, and they brought me directly to Mr. Wrigley's office in the Wrigley building on the top floor.
Wow.
That's where his
yeah.
private offices were. Yeah. So you can just imagine the excitement
oh, sure,
in a
yeah.
young fella
yeah.
meeting the owner of a major league club, your yeah. favorite club. And but they used to make a lot of me, and I work out with Billy Jurgis, Billy Herman, Stan Hack, and Phil Cavaretta wasn't on the ball club. Uh-huh. At that time when I was working out, but he did join the club during those years when I was working out. Yeah. I could name you all those kids. Rig Stevenson, yeah. Kai Kai Kyler,
oh, yeah.
Gabby Hartness, you know. Uh-huh. And when you'd work out, you'd get, Ralph Wheeler would bring me in there early. Or you'd bring me in Bracefield, Babcock Street. You go in the side entrance. Brace clubhouse was on the left. And on the right was the visiting clubhouse. And if you, when you walk in there for the first time, the biggest thrill you ever got in your life.
Oh, yeah.
You see all these big league faces. You're trying to pick out the faces. And,
yeah.
And, but they're all raising hell, having a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, and you're walking in there. And then the trainer, Andy Lawshaw, who was a famous person at that time.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Oh. Yeah.
I know he gets long-winded, so you might
oh,
need some,
geez, this
some
is
stamina.
Great. Wow, what service.
Yeah. How about some...
Just put him on the chair yeah. there, Dave.
Well, yeah. It's just a little...
He gets
cider
paid.
And yeah. a few nuts. Help yourself.
Okay.
Some more there.
Great, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Dave.
Yeah.
yeah. But anyway, the excitement of just walking into a major league clubhouse and what they would do with the trainer have charge. Andy Lawshaw was a famous... Everybody knew. He only even had his own body rub. Andy Lawshaw body rub. Great big gruff guy.
Uh-huh.
And he was also the trainer for the Chicago Bears. As soon as the baseball season was over, he was the trainer for the Chicago Bears with assistants.
Was that fairly common for them to have trainers at that time? Or they
baseball clubs?
Yeah.
Oh, no, no.
They all had them?
Oh, yeah. And you, okay. you had to be a very, very competent because they relied on the trainer for so many things. Even making sure the baggage is on and all. He was a baggage man, too.
Oh, yeah, he did everything.
He had other chores.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. he was a very important person on the
oh,
ball
yeah.
club.
Okay, I didn't...
And he got to know what the ball players confided in them, and, you know,
uh-huh.
the
uh-huh.
managers
uh-huh.
use the trainers.
Yeah, okay, yeah, for information.
Very much so, sure,
was,
yeah.
What,
and,
uh-huh.
but,
yeah.
I forget where I was at.
So we thought you were Mr.
Yeah.
Wrigley and all
no,
that?
No, then yeah. The trainer, I started saying, the trainer would give you a uniform, Cubs uniform. You were in there to work out
yeah.
prior to the game. Gave you a baggy old uniform. He said, okay, kid, go over in the corner by the shower, get dressed. And as soon as you get dressed, go down the dugout, the visiting dugout. You go through the Braves dugout, then across the way is the visitors dugout. Go there and sit on the bench and wait. The coaches will be out there, okay? And that's what you do, of course. Excitement. But they got to know me, you know, because
yeah.
I've been doing it for 2 or 3 years, and I was just a kid. And,
yeah.
And they call me all kinds of nicknames, being an Italian boy.
Yeah.
Remember, Billy Herman took a shine to me, you know, because he was a second baseman.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he used to call me, naturally, what would he call any Italian kid? Yeah. Tony.
Come
over here, Tony.
Right.
Look, put your clothes in my locker.
Yeah. Know. So it's like Babe Ruth, he called everybody kid, right?
Yeah,
so he
right.
called everybody
yeah.
Tony.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, that's the way it was.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, they brought me into Chicago, get back to my visit there to Chicago. They brought me up to Mr. Wrigley's office. Mr. Wrigley was 42 years old in 1938. This was 1938. I was a class of 39.
Okay.
Okay. Captain liked the baseball. This is Christmas vacation. And I'm brought up there to Mr. Wrigley's office. And when I went in that room, there was this desk that looked bigger than any desk I ever saw in my life. And this man, 42 years old, standing behind it. You know, just a figure that just the expression on his face. He says, you know, he didn't have to say a word.
Yeah.
So glad to see you.
Yeah.
He said, Leonard, you come to me as a bright young man, a gentleman, and a young man who my men tell me has a future in baseball. Now, I want you to sit down. And that's exactly what he said to me.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm not hearing a word he's saying.
Yeah.
I'm just shaking. Here I am, I'm meeting Mr. Wrigley, the owner of a Major League ball club, multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Family owned this baseball club for years and years, and I'm in the Wrigley building.
Right.
And I hear so much about Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
You know, this is all going through my mind. Yeah. He said, I want you to sit down, because I've got something to say to you. And I want you to understand, this is not going to hurt you in college. I'm not going to ask you to sign anything. You understand? I'm not going to ask you to sign anything. He said, but I want you to accept this. Now, when he said accept this, I didn't know what he had in mind. I wasn't out there to be signing a contract or anything like that. Just said, you come out and talk to Mr. Wrigley. He says, I know you have a large family, and your folks work very, very hard, and I'm quite sure this will help you. And he's reaching in the drawer of his desk, and he pulls out a check. He says, don't accept this unless you promise me you go right back to Villanova, and with the idea of coming back to me, if you wish, you'll have plenty of time to think of it. Want to become a member of the Cubs organization. That's the first inclination that I had that he was going to be giving me something. Now, anybody happening something like that, that would hurt them to go back and play amateur sports like in college or anything like that. But he says, don't accept this unless you promise me you go back to school. Mm-hmm. Don't say anything to anybody, but this is going to help your family. This is what we're trying to do. But what he's making me is obligated to the Chicago. I didn't care about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was obligated to the Cubs right from the beginning.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I looked at the check. It was more money than I ever saw in my life. It was $1,500.
Wow.
And I don't even remember thanking him.
Yeah.
You know, I was so excited about it, having a $1,500 check and thinking about bringing this home to my family. You know.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Wow, sure.
But before they put me on the train the next day, Clarence Rowland had me come. I stayed right across where the Tribune Tower is now. That used to be a big hotel, and it's still there. And he had me come from the hotel over to the Wrigley building. On the first floor of the Wrigley is a beautiful men's haberdashery. I can still see the name, haberdashery.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Mr. Wrigley wants you to pick out an overcoat. I said, I don't need an overcoat. Mr. Wrigley wants you to pick out an overcoat. You understand?
Yeah.
Mr. Wrigley wants you to pick out an overcoat. So I said, oh, myself. I knew of certain brands of overcoats just by going to R.H. White's, because I married a girl from across the street, Jean, my wife. We grew up together. And she worked at R.H. White's company. And on holidays, like coming home from Villanova, I'd work at R.H. White's in the men's department.
Oh,
all
yeah.
these men's salesmen, they worked on commission selling men's suits and men's overcoats. And so I had an idea of what the...
Yeah,
and then
that was good in that.
And I saw that brand name that I wanted, and I saw the price, $55 on the coat. And anyway, he said, if that's what you like. I remember it was a chocolate brown, raglan sleeves, slash pockets. And the style those days was right down to your ankles, practically.
Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Rowland says, Leonard, they always call me Leonard. That's perfect for you. Now, I want you to pick out a hat. Oh, I don't wear a hat. I want you to pick out a hat to go with that coat.
Yeah.
He picked out a brown hat with a wide brim.
Oh, yeah.
And he always wore his hat synonymous of Clarence Roll, and everybody knew him because this side was always down, not this side, that side.
Yeah.
So I fixed that after a while. But I felt like a hoodlum from the south side of
Chicago. On Al Capone's boys, huh?
That's the way I felt, you know.
Yeah,
so I
sure,
never had an
yeah.
overcoat in my life.
Wow.
And then he says, well, you might as well get a pair of shoes while you're here. So he got, it was his okay. He could do anything he wanted.
Yeah.
He said, pick out a pair of shoes. How about a pair of four shines? He said, then I couldn't, all I could think of, how, I wonder if they have, in my mind, I said, I wonder if they have Regal shoes. Because as a kid from East Boston, you took a streetcar into Boston, the subway, and you come out of Denver, China, and it's still there. A golden boot.
Uh-huh.
Regal. And as kids, there was one price in that store, but they were the shiniest shoes in all the whole city of Boston.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
$5.50.
Wow.
So I said to the man who took care of me, the coat, and he said, do you have Regal shoes? He says, yeah, we have Regal shoes, but we have, you know, they named all the walkover, all the big name shoes. And I said, I'd like to have a pair of Regal shoes. Yeah. And that's what I picked out, a pair of Regal shoes. But that's me coming home now.
Yeah, yeah.
My new coat, new hat, new shoes, a $1,500 check in my pocket. Wow. I can't wait to get home, you know.
Yeah.
I can't wait. And
that was a Merry Christmas.
$1,500 check in my pocket. I remember getting out of South Station, and I think I ran, you know, all the way home. But of course, I didn't.
Yeah.
Take another streetcar, streetcar, subway, and up there, and up to Byron Street. And we always owned a home. We just sold a home just a couple of years ago. It was a two-family.
Mm-hmm.
One of the family always lived on the first floor, and we all lived on the second floor. And I'm running up those stairs, and right at supper time, and I'm knocking on the door. And I get an answer from somebody, come in, just like that.
Yeah.
So I said, that's not good enough, and I hit it louder.
Yeah.
And they all yelled out, come in!
Yeah.
Figured it must have been the insurance man.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Anyway, when they opened the door, they were sure it was the insurance man. They sure didn't recognize me. But I didn't make the story what it was. I just took the check and I put it between my mother and father. Neither one of them. My father did read.
Yeah.
But it was a check. It wasn't cash.
Yeah.
He looked at it and didn't say anything.
Just
and my mother didn't know what it was, a piece of
paper.
But my oldest brother reached across it. He was like another father to us.
Yeah.
He just reached across and he said, I'll take we didn't see the man of bats. You know, baseball. He kept mentioning baseball. From that day on, my mother kicked the kids out of the house. Get out and play ball. It's the only way to make a living.
That made everything all right.
Yeah, it was okay. And every year she would say to me, when are you going to go to work? But Hank Barrowe, you mentioned Hank Barrowe.
Yeah.
Hank Barrowe. Went to Fordham, I went to Villanova. He was a real rival. Both Catholic schools, and we loved to beat. Well, we had a good ball club. We had a very, very good ball club. And
did anybody else on your team play pro? Or
Leo Schopmeyer, the second baseman, he played Triple A, a little bit of Major League ball, but no, none of them. We had another fellow by the name of Bill McLaughlin signed with the Athletics, and he was a big, handsome left Irish kid. I was so positive, he was a can't miss.
Yeah.
Type of guy, but he chose to go he got a commission. He was at a school on an ROTC or something like that, and he chose, after giving baseball just a brief try, I think he, that's the way I felt about him.
Yeah.
And we had some Cowboy Crawley from Cambridge was a second baseman. I played with him three summers in a row, and he got the three of us from this area here, Boston. Ralph Wheeler got us the full scholarships baseball, and that was unheard of in those.
Yeah.
And all of us needed it. We came from families like mine.
They're very poor, yeah.
And you got a first baseman, second baseman, the shortstop. Cowboy Crawley from Cambridge, Bobby Bourne from Watertown, and myself. The three Musketeers.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But anyway, Hank Barrowe Paul Critchell, a famous scout back in those, signed a lot of Yankee ball players.
Mickey Mantle, I think.
The scout that he saw most all our ball games in the Northern League. And we'd see him at all the ball games. And the Cubs had a scout, Jack Doyle from Holyoke. He signed Gabby Hart, and he signed a couple of old-timer, bachelor. I used to see him a lot of my ball games. But I was Cubs. I didn't care if anybody else was interested. As long as the Cubs were interested, that's the way I felt. But I got a knock on the door when I came back from Chicago. Now, this is in February. And I didn't say anything to anybody. Didn't tell anybody where
this
I was.
Still between semesters? You didn't go back to school?
No, just before the second semester started. Just before the second semester started. Got a knock on my room door, and I was rooming with a pitcher named Joe Desmond from Chester, Pennsylvania, a great pal of mine, and knock on the door, and it's Coach Doc Jacobs, who came right from Revere, Mass, Beachmont, great guy, assistant football coach, everything, and it was Coach, and who's with him but Paul Critchell. And I saw Paul Critchell. I said, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. But anyway, Paul was great. The only thing my coach said to me, he said, Lenny, I know you've been working out with the Cubs, and I know Ralph Wheeler has a tie on you all these years since you were a kid, and it was he that recommended me to him here in Villanova. And he said, are you obligated in any way to the Chicago Cubs? And of course, I knew Mr. Critchell.
Yeah.
Mr. Critchell didn't say a word yet. And but anyway, I said, no, I'm lying like a son of a gun.
Yeah.
I could have said, oh, yes, I accepted the money. But anyway, I said, no, I'm not. So now Paul Critchell, little guy, he said, Lenny, if you have now, it's perfectly all right. It's a good organization. The whole, if you have, just say so. Because I've just come from Hank Baroe, and we came into agreement. And this is what we're doing at this time of the year. He didn't tell me what he gave him or not. I found out he gave him $8,000. From Hank, but anyway, we came to agree with Hank, and it's not going to stop him from continuing playing. He's not saying a word. Now, if that's the agreement you came with the Cubs, it's perfectly all right, and I'm here to shake your hand if you have, because if you haven't, I'd like to do that same too, if you're interested. Now, who isn't interested in signing with the Yankees?
Right.
You know, kid isn't?
Sure, yeah.
So,
especially that time, yeah.
But just the way he handled me, I said, I admit it. But right then and there, Doc Jacobs said, well, Leonard, you know, you've accepted this money. You cannot play for me. You're all done.
Oh.
You're here.
Yeah.
I was admitted. He was angry because he was there. He was going to get a little piece from the Yankees. That's the way they worked.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
That's the way they worked.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, I'm sorry, Lenny. He says, I'm going to lose you, but I just might as well let you know now. Yeah. So that's when I let the Cubs know just what happened. Mr. Wrigley, I still have the letter upstairs, sent the school 4 years tuition, $4,000. That's what it would cost.
That's what it cost.
A four-year education.
Yeah.
It was actually $3,800 for four-year education in those days.
Wow.
Can you imagine
that?
But he sent them the letter, that he didn't do anything to, it was just trying to help the family out, and it was all right. But I have the letter upstairs from Mr. Wrigley to the president of Villanova, and he sent me a copy.
Wow.
Father Stanford.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wow. But what happened, Lou Boudreau was a basketball all-star at the University of Illinois. you being a Sabre member, you know all this. I'm not telling you anything new.
But he was also
the captain
yeah.
and shortstop
yeah.
of the Illinois baseball team. It came out. They found out that he had accepted money from the Cleveland Indians. He was managing the Cleveland Indians, player managing a couple of years after that.
Right, yeah.
But now they made a very strong investigation through the coaches of the different colleges and universities. And I know that's how they did it. That's what I was told anyway. They had, the coaches had to come up because it would really fall back on them if they didn't. If they found out that any one of their players had accepted or signed yeah. an agreement
yeah.
during their academic years and not making them legal to play,
yeah.
it would have made them illegal, you know,
sure.
if
yeah.
they didn't you know, submit
yeah.
it. But
yeah.
so they found out that Barroia and Marullo and a few others had
right.
accepted.
Okay.
So we're all banned from playing college ball
oh,
for
right.
our senior year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But many of them would come in agreement, even as sophomores, even as freshmen.
Sure.
Some
sure.
Some schools, some yeah. baseball clubs paid for their tuition
and
before
everything.
They even started.
Yeah. Well,
or will you pay my way through college? Yeah. I'll sign with you when I get
they,
through.
They're still doing the same thing, right? College basketball
yeah.
players and
yeah.
things like
yeah,
that.
There's
football
so much
players,
of that going
you know.
On. So that's how I got started.
Yeah.
And anyway, I wound up.
Did you ever go back and get your degree?
Boston. I went back to Villanova.
Uh-huh.
Hoping to get my degree there.
Yeah.
3.5 years.
Yeah.
And I had good grades and all that. And naturally, I wanted an education.
Yeah.
And I got called into the office after a few days in class. I got called into the office, and I was told I owe $1,000 for my remaining semester. $1,000 for my remaining semester.
After
I couldn't
what?
Believe it. I have the letter
from
said that they sent
Wrigley,
you the $4,000.
Yeah. yeah.
So I went to see my favorite professor, Father Burns, who was the head of the history department. We used to spend an awful lot of time together. He was one of these.
Okay.
We used to spend a lot of time with Father Burns.
Yeah.
Not only has written history books, and
yeah.
he never used a book at all, the text in class at all. He just told us about history.
Yeah.
You know, he was great. We loved him. And he had an antique fire engine, which he kept under the football stands. Okay? Spent
yeah.
a lot of time. That
yeah.
was his, you know, his pastime. And he was a priest.
Uh-huh.
And we used to spend a lot of time with him, you
yeah.
know, doing his thing. And
sure.
get to, so I went to see Father Burns, and all he could say, well, I don't know what I can do about it. I can try.
Yeah.
I can try. He says, you live in, you know, just outside of Boston, East Boston. I says, yes. He says, Jesuit training is not an Augustinian training. That's what he's kidding me, he
yeah.
says now. And he's putting a little pun,
yeah.
jab at the Jesuits.
Right.
He said, maybe it can be arranged that you can go to Boston College and it won't cost you as much as this $1,000 that they will
yeah.
here, you know, tell him very confidentially. So he made all the arrangements for me to attend Boston College. And when I went to Boston College Evening School
mm-hmm.
at night, and the day school during the day in one semester, which is a tough thing to do,
oh.
during the off season.
Oh, yeah.
And I got my degree from
BC
in
education. So you graduated from BC, they accepted all your credits from
yes,
Villanova?
Yes, from
I
Villanova.
See, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's
my credits
good.
Had to be pretty good to
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
You can, it's almost impossible to do today.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yeah.
Although I knew one scout years ago, Chick Whalen, a little guy who was with Pittsburgh for so many years, a farm director for a few years from Needham, Mass. He was going to three or four different colleges, University Tufts, Northeastern, yeah. while he was working as a scout and wound up with a college degree.
Wow.
And working during the wintertime when you're not scouting, teaching at Hyde Park High School.
Wow.
Now that's determination.
That's a full load. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then in 39 you signed, right? You signed with the Cubs and
in other words,
you completed school, right?
I went to school. Correction.
Okay.
I notified the Cubs, Mr. Rowland, Clarence Rowland, because he was my contact with the Cubs. I contacted the Cubs of what happened, told them exactly what happened.
Okay.
And Mr. Wrigley told Mr. Rowland that, look, we will take care of everything. Don't worry about it. This is when he decided to send the school the $4,000, so I'll be ready to be able to go back to Villanova and get my degree. That's when he sent the school the $4,000.
Right.
But be prepared to come to spring training to Catalina Island instead of going back to school.
Okay.
In other words,
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to play ball, so why go back to school?
Sure.
I could get my degree in the fall.
Right, right.
So that's the way it was arranged for me to go to BC. But come to Catalina Island.
Yeah.
So I was in Catalina in the three or four shot. Billy Rogel, they traded for Billy Rogel that year. They traded Billy Jurgis to the Giants. They had Billy Rogel. Bobby Maddox was a competitor of mine my first year in 39 as a shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a better arm than anyone. I could throw and I could run. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I could do. And I loved to play.
Yeah.
But in my anxiety to show them my arm unknowingly, because kids back in those days didn't work out in the wintertime. You go to the Paris Street, the local gym, you run around the track a little time, play a little handball, but there was not the opportunities. Today, go to the workout places, they have all these kind of things, conditioning and so forth. So you're coming from New England, you go to Catalina Island, the beautiful California weather, and you're out there, and geez, your arm feels pretty good. Before you know it, you're throwing when it's not ready to be thrown
the way you should be throwing.
You get in playing. So you overextended my arm and kept saying, well, take a few days off, get rested. I lost that whole year. They sent me in Moline for a short time.
Oh, yeah, I see. Okay, and you had
they put me on the mound throwing bat in practice.
Okay.
You know, try to force, they think, you know, the doctor's saying, well, maybe it's in his head. Let him, some of the coaches thought, let him throw a bat. He's got that good arm of his. Let him throw. Maybe he'll throw it out. That's it. Give him more confidence.
Strategy, then, your philosophy.
I would never recommend that to anybody. I would be crying all night long with the pain.
Yeah.
Finally, I came home in June. Yeah.
Okay. So that was a lost year. So then it was just rest after that, right?
And that's when I was taking some summer courses at BC and extended. It afforded me to get my degree in that time.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went to Tulsa my first year. My first year in ball
40.
Was Tulsa.
Yeah, in 40, yeah.
Yeah.
That, was that double A or was that?
Well, they called it A1 back in those days.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. They called it A1, but the Texas League and the Southern League, they called it A1. You had the International, you had the American Association of Pacific Coast League, or known as, well, we always know them as Triple A.
Triple A.
That was the next highest of the big leagues.
Right.
And the Texas and the Southern League were just below that.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
So you went from the Texas League, the Southern League, say, to the Association, the International League, then.
Okay.
But my biggest plus, I can say, playing the Texas League, played every game. And not many fellas, two fellas played every game that whole season. And if you look up my record, it'll show that I played every game. Not that I played every inning, because they'd take me out for a pinch hitter.
In the later
innings. But another shortstop myself, and Eddie Wakus played every inning. Only Eddie Wakus, as skinny as he was, played every inning of every game. Texas.
That's quite a feat in that heat and those weather conditions.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. The heat of the Texas,
yeah.
Traveling by train.
Yeah.
Hey, we are in Beaumont and Shreveport, and especially in Beaumont, they put water troughs in the dugout. And in between innings, you put your feet right in there, shoes and all, right in there, keep you cool. Uh-huh. And Beaumont was a Texas affiliate at that time, and they wore those heavy, heavy red, heavy flannel uniforms.
Yeah,
I've seen,
Virgil
Trucks, I've seen the big first baseman, and they had a good ball club. All those kids went to the big leagues. I see, walking in from the mound or something, just collapsed before.
Yeah.
Of course, it was a long schedule, a lot of traveling and all that.
Yeah. What did you get? What did you get paid then? Do you remember?
In the
Texas
League. Well, my contract was $350 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That was my contract. And when you went to the big leagues, the Cubs had a policy, which was a very fair policy compared to the other ball clubs. If you were signed to a $5,000 a year contract. Okay, they didn't raise your salary. If you made the ball club, you still made $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were the regular, not made the ball, you were signed to $3,500.
I see.
$3,500, not $350 a month, $3,500. If you became a regular, you made $5,000.
I see.
Which you got the rest at the end of the year, not during the year. They would never raise your salary during the year, but at the end of the year, you get a $1,500 bonus for being a regular.
Everybody who's a regular got paid the same thing?
Oh, no. If you're a rookie that's a breaking in.
Okay, breaking in, okay.
And every year after that, that's why these players today...
They negotiate, okay.
You had to negotiate for your contract the next year.
Yeah.
And man, boy, they find of all the things that you didn't do that they expected you to do. And
right.
In the letter they would send you, they kept you down as much as you can.
Yeah.
Unless you were such a ball player.
Free agents and all that sort
not
of
stuff.
No union.
Who was a free agent? Nobody.
No, pre-agents. Didn't have agents, right?
No.
You negotiated
Ralph,
your own contract.
Ralph Wheeler's what agent you had. A friend.
Yeah. Who was their manager in Texas? Remember?
Roy Johnson. One of the coaches that used to be with, he coached with the big club, and then they had him go to the minor league because Tulsa was the Cubs' young team.
Yes,
prospect team.
Okay.
Where the young prospects, the Pacific Coast League, which was always Los Angeles for years and years until they made the swap.
Yeah.
Los Angeles was all the veterans team.
Okay.
Fellas that played in the big leagues or rather play in the Coast League, they buy from other ball clubs or trade from other ball clubs to have, and they always had championship clubs in Los Angeles, but they all had veteran players.
The Cubs didn't have a very big farm system like the Cardinals. The Cardinals.
Oh, that was a chain gang.
Yeah. Cubs never did, just a small number.
Clubs did.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals were known for that. Then Brooklyn came into that.
When Branch Rickey moved
Branch
over.
Rickey.
Yeah.
I'm not a Branch Rickey man.
Are you not? Why are you?
I just do it.
The
great emancipator.
Yeah.
If you're a Cub, you're not a Rickey man. Because you hated Brooklyn. You hated Pittsburgh. Ricky.
Yeah, you hated St.
And who was Ricky's partner in St. Louis all those years? I mean, just from talk you get from the veteran players.
You just keep bumping into them.
Sure,
I
remember, I'm scouting for the Cubs.
Yeah.
And I had a colored boy, black boy, from Springfield College, a terrific young man and a great ball player. I went to his wedding, in fact. And he agreed to come with me. This is, free agency.
Yeah.
Free agency. And whoever did the best job becomes a very close, and they really felt that you were straightforward and honest and would do the best and most for them, gave you your best chance of signing any play. And that's what you had. You had to sell yourself, sell the ball club, sell
your
base.
Integrity. And
You had to do that. You had to spend a lot of time with the family, the uncles and everybody else, so they got to know you, that they could depend on you. That's the guy. Stay with him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's you had to sell yourself.
Yeah.
These scouts today, it's a different. You're a reporter today and nothing else. You had to know talent. Yes, I'm not taking that away from scouts today.
Yeah, there's no personal relationship, though.
No. Whoever has the pick.
Right.
But you got to rate the kid so you can be picked up there, too.
Yeah.
But then they also have other guys come in and
cross-checking.
It's a different ballgame today. Unfairly, I call them reporters.
Yeah.
Because that's what they are.
Yeah. Well, you still got to
know. In other words,
you got
to be able to use a computer today.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
Yeah.
At my age.
So you played at Tulsa in the end of 41. You went to Toronto?
No, I went to Los Angeles.
Oh, it says Toronto here. Yeah,
I went to Los Angeles first.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And then got off to a slow start.
Oh.
They expected me to bing, and I would be up in the big leagues because they were ready for another shortstop up there. And the competition that I had was it was either an older shortstop or a younger fellow. I could run and I could throw, and they had big expectations. If I just hit a little bit, I'd be all right. I'd establish myself. But anyway, I was at Los Angeles for a short while. And then they made a deal with Lena Blackburn, who was the manager. They had somebody on that ball club. A fellow named Hill was a pretty good hitter, and Los Angeles wanted him again. The veteran teams out there.
Yeah.
So, and they from what I understand, Connie Mack, and I'm from Villanova, Philadelphia boy, so to speak, and a pretty good fielding shortstop, and they were looking at me maybe as a ball player that they might be able to make a. So I was traded on loan.
I
never left the Cubs organization
right.
to the Toronto Ball Club that year. Yeah,
uh-huh.
It was a good experience, but I was out of my element. You know, everybody knew or anything.
Were the, in terms of the competition, were the Pacific Coast League and the International League, were they pretty much on par or?
Pacific Coast League was always known as
because
the league where some of the players, they used to say that they didn't want to leave the Pacific Coast. They had a chance to go to the major leagues.
Yeah.
They played 175 games there.
Right.
They played seven-game series, sometimes eight-game series. Mondays off, doubleheader on Sunday, Mondays off. So you were in a town, you didn't do as much traveling. The Pacific Coast League was a place to play.
Yeah.
Especially if you got a couple of years up in the big leagues, and some of them never did get to the big leagues. They're just happy to play out the Jigger Stats, for instance. That's a famous name from Holy Cross.
Uh-huh.
He was out there, played out there, it seemed like 30 years.
I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Loved it. A legend.
Uh-huh. Okay, then I see that. You mentioned they were trying to get you up to the Cubs and all that. Did the war have something to do with it? Because
The war had a lot to do with it.
Uh-huh.
It looked like I was going in the service, and I had a college degree, and I was going to go in as an officer, an ensign, ball players, and be able to get into a special program and something like that. And I was not going to be able to do anything about it. Fine. But I always got, I was married. Got married in 41, married the girl next door, and would get it 6 months and another 6 months. And then I remember we were in Philadelphia, Jimmy Wilson was the manager, and one of his very, very close friends was a naval doctor. Stationed at the St. Mary's, he was a doctor at St. Mary's Hospital in Philadelphia. Now he's a naval doctor in the Navy, and was the second baseman was
for the Cubs.
Second.
He
later with the Red Sox. He was a hell of a ball player, but he never just hit it right.
Lou Stringer. Yeah.
Lou Stringer, Bill Nicholson, and I. He took us by the hand to take our naval exam. And we're the three of us, all college educated, we figured all three of us will be ensigns. And Bill Nicholson went to Washington College, and he wanted to go to Navy, knew he was colorblind, so he was not accepted to go to Annapolis Navy. Lou Stringer was all excited. He was all excited. He was a very, very religious. Very religious. He had a brother that was a priest. Very, very religious. And in fact, he said, geez, wouldn't his brother be proud of him coming out in the Navy? If he has to go in the service, he'd be an officer in the Navy.
Yeah.
And I can remember. And I had no idea. I was colorblind. The three of us were all colorblind.
Huh.
And we'd be accepted in the Navy if we went into the CBs. That was not what we intended.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, we didn't accept the. Give us more time off.
Okay, so you got deferred because.
The more deferment. I got another deferment because I was had a very, very bad case. One time I was going in for my physical. I had a very bad case of poison ivy. We owned a house up here in North Wilmington. I was out there. I thought I was like a farmer. And I was going to clear all this brush.
Oh, yeah.
I got poison ivy. Then I got what they gave me. Just a neighbor up there, an old timer, he used a thing that really left me with scars on both legs.
Yeah. I see.
I just reported. When they saw what I had, I got another 6 months.
Okay.
And by that time, things eased off.
Yeah. I presume then you started.
So I was getting a break
too, right?
Because I had a child and the family and things. Yeah. By that time, of course, those are the war years. There was always affected. Some good ball player was, taken in by the service or just coming back. There was a lot of changes back in that days.
Yeah.
But my competition mostly was fellows like Bobby Sturgeon. First of us who became a great scout, I mentioned him earlier, 39, Bobby Maddox, Bobby Maddox, and the old timer who I didn't like at all, Billy Rogel. Nice guy, a good shortstop. Not great.
Yeah.
Not great, but just his demeanor, you wouldn't like him.
All right, so you were, it says you're 41, you were in the Pacific Coast League, Toronto and Chicago. Yeah. You were up at the end of the year, they called you up in Chicago.
Yeah,
Okay, and then after that you were in the... pretty much started playing regular and
I was a regular shortstop for 4 or 5 years. Not that I had great years, but they kept waiting for me to have the great year. I like to take a little credit for Eddie Stanky's career. And I say that with a little tongue in cheek. Eddie Stanky was a shortstop.
Right.
He married Milt Stock's daughter. Milt Stock was the manager for 3 or 4 years in the minor leagues at Macon, Georgia. And he's also part owner, I think. But he married Eddie Stanky. I'm getting off on my story of telling you Eddie Stanky's story. But I never could see how this beautiful, tall, Southern belle married Eddie Stanky, this double ugly... mean great guy.
Opposites attract, I guess.
Great guy. Yeah, right. Great guy. And my pal.
Yeah.
He's very religious.
Eddie Stanky was?
Mass every morning.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was a hellion on the field. He was really...
Different personality.
Yeah.
And made you think he was tough.
Yeah.
But he was MVP in Milwaukee when Charlie Grimm and Bill Beck owned Milwaukee.
Okay.
Okay, in 1942.
Yeah.
1943 or 42.
Yeah.
Because I had a decent year in 42, my first year. and
yeah, he hit 256, two home runs,
And but anyway, he was MVP at Milwaukee as a shortstop, which was a Cubs farm team.
Right.
Run by Bill Veeck and Charlie Grimm. They brought Charlie Brim back the next
Bill
year.
Bill Veeck Sr.
Bill or Jr.
Jr., okay.
Bill Veeck was the owner.
Right.
He brought in Charlie Grimm to run the ball club, making a part owner. They made a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, Mr. Wrigley talked him into coming back the following year. Uh-huh. But anyway, now, he led the league, 342, MVP, had a great year. What are they going to do with him? He's got to come up to the Cubs. Okay?
Sure.
The deal was they get the pick of the players.
Yeah.
And he's got to come up with the Cubs. He comes up as a second baseman because I'm the future shortstop.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I can run and I can throw.
Okay? Yeah.
Put the bat on the ball, but not a good hitter.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we got along great, working together. But he didn't get off to a good start. He was not leading off. He was hitting behind me in the lineup. Sometimes I'd hit second if I'm, you know, making contact, and because I could run and I could bunt and get on base. And Stan Hack, no one was going to take him. He was the best leadoff hitter in baseball, Stan Hack. Hit 300 every year, solid, good base runner, steady ball player.
Yeah.
He was the number one leadoff man in baseball. Very, very popular. Smiling Stan Hack. 6 foot one, handsome guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, Eddie's struggling. Not the ball player that he was the year before. He's not leading off, and that's his forte, getting the base on balls, letting the ball hit him, hit the loose shirts, and
get on base
wearing the high
pants
and getting on base, and he could hit the ball down the lines, foul the ball off.
Uh-huh.
You know, he could do all those things, but he wasn't getting the chance to do it, hitting down behind the catcher.
That's where
they hit him, and that's where he was.
Pitch around him and everything.
Right,
yeah.
Well, but anyway, he's not leading off, okay? Now, the Cubs are in need of a ball player, and they're not too happy with Stanky. And give credit to the manager of Brooklyn.
At that time, it wasn't DeRocher, was
DeRocher.
It? Was it DeRocher?
Yeah. DeRocher saw all this. Maybe his scouts, I don't know, but he must have.
DeRocher, he made a trade. Of a ball player too.
Same type of ball player. He must have loved Stanky, or maybe his scouts liked him, or maybe I don't know. But anyway, they made a deal: Stanky to Brooklyn for Bob Chipman, left-hand pitcher out of New York, Long Island. Made the deal.
Yeah.
As soon as they made the deal, he's leadoff man.
Yeah.
Now he starts to come into his own. He had a great career. Yeah. That's why I say I've got to take credit. He never got a shot to play shortstop and leadoff.
So you forced there. I never heard too much about Chipman.
No, died a young man. He was against Brooklyn, he pitched well against Brooklyn.
Yeah.
All those left-hand hitting ball clubs.
Yeah.
It was a left-hand pitch with a good curveball. Nice guy. He was my pal. So. And the fact that he, his wife and my wife still correspond.
I see.
He's been dead for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And but anyway, against certain ball clubs, he was like a specialist.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, I don't remember using him in relief, but he's the type of guy you could use in relief against a left-handed pitch hitter.
Yeah. I saw where I just read Jimmy Foxx's biography, and he ended up playing on the Cubs at the end of his career. It sounds like he was a great guy.
Worst enemy. Yeah. I say all worst enemy. He was too good to everybody.
Yeah.
And hard on himself. You know.
Yeah, he was always picking up the check they sent whenever
he picking up
out.
The check and I guess letting kids make money and all, you know.
He liked his drinks too, and
stop on the way, stop on the way back, and befriended everybody. Just a happy-go-lucky guy.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Oh yeah, I see the picture. Jeez. Was drinking among the players? Was that a problem? Alcoholism?
Yeah, but you never thought much of it then, because the drugs, you never heard of drugs. There was no such a thing as drugs.
Right. It was more socially acceptable, I think, to
drugs. I never heard of the word drugs. Who's taking drugs? Drinking. Hey, he can really spend time down at the bar. And I don't know, Eddie Wakis, nicest guy. Well read, reading all the time. Well dressed.
Yeah.
Like to have that little boutique, what do you call it?
Boutonniere?
Boutonniere.
Yeah.
I like to go sit at the bar.
Yeah.
Scotch was his thing.
Yeah.
You know, but he just liked that air.
Uh-huh.
He just liked that air about him.
Yeah.
It finally got the best of him.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it finally got the best of him. But, hey, I roomed with Phil Cavaretta for 7 years, and I never drank. I was brought up with wine on the table all the time. I still don't have a glass of beer. If it's a hot day and somebody will bring me a glass, then I'll enjoy it. But I've been brought up around it. Phil Cavaretta, same way.
Yeah.
They used to call us the Goody Goody Twins. Or the Grand Opera, Grand Opera kids. Yeah.
Is it both Italian?
The two Italians. Yeah. He was a good roommate, and he still claims I was the best roommate he ever had, and he had many of them.
Some stories about you in this in this book here.
Yeah.
About how he used to get you going about your hitting and all that.
Oh.
You know, and
he's another guy. He's got to give me a little credit for that big year he had. 45, led the league in hitting.
Yeah.
He had a habit. When he was a kid, 17 years old, he was in the big leagues.
Wow.
Okay, right out of high school.
Yeah.
Lane Tech High School, right near Wrigley Field.
That's right in Chicago,
In Chicago. Yeah. He joined the ball club. It was one of those days that I joined for a workout.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Augie Galland, he was one of these pranksters. A very popular guy. He had his best years with Brooklyn.
Yes.
But he was a Cub.
Yeah.
Right out of California. Handsome. Not big, but he could play.
Yeah.
I used to go in workout. And, you know, I knew Augie Galland. I didn't know them personally, but they recognized me. And like I say, Billy Herman and he were very, very close. And Billy used to call me Tony. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, when I came in there, and Cavaretta just joined the ball club, and he had his locker down in the corner, the last locker down there at Brace Field, when I came in. Well, I'm in the corner by the shower, getting dressed all by myself to go out there and work, and I saw all the writers and everything around Cavaretta, and, you know, talking to him and all that. And of course, I'm trying to take as much of it in as I can, you know, really enjoying watching every move. He was my size, Italian, just like me, with the same age.
Oh, he was your size. I thought he would be a lot bigger than.
No, no.
Because he was. Didn't he have pretty good power?
He was a good hitter.
Yeah.
But when he was young, he was a straight up hitter.
I see.
And he hit for power.
Yeah.
But he pulled everything. And they finally.
Yeah.
Worked on him, go to work on him. Now he's got to adjust, and he adjusted into a complete opposite type of hitter. He used to go in a deep crouch, and he get that arm out. And his thinking up at the plate, I'm aiming at the shortstop, which made him wait a little bit.
Okay.
That was whole theory on it. He used to try to get me to think that way, and I would try it, but I didn't have the capabilities that he had. The quick hands and the quick, what it takes, that quick bat. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
But he did, and that's made him a good hitter.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
But I can remember he'd say to me, because I used to call him Philibuck. That was the nickname that he had.
Uh-huh.
Buck. Philibuck.
Yeah.
But Philibuck was his nickname.
Yeah.
And he said he had a habit just before he stepped into the batter's box of spitting and trying to hit the spit. If he misses, he'd back off again, and he wouldn't get in the batter's box until he hit that spit that he spit out. You know? if he went dry,
well,
forget it. He's in trouble. So So I said to him one time, I said, Phil, you're not staying down.
Yeah.
Because I knew him like a book.
Sure.
From watching him and being his roommate. I knew how he was thinking. I knew what his thinking was all the time. And in other words, when he had a habit, just as the pitch was getting ready, he'd come up a little bit. I said, Phil, I'm trying to, because he's a hothead. I mean, he had a temper on him. And I said, Phil, you're coming up. You're not staying down. I said, well, let me know. Let me know.
Yeah.
I said, how the hell am I going to let you know? Unless I yelled something at you. But I got to be careful when I do it, you know.
Yeah.
He said, all I want to hear is buck. If I move, say, let me know, buck. Nobody will know what the hell that is.
Oh, okay.
Everybody knows me as Philly Buck.
Yeah.
You know.
Buck. So you had your code word.
So we had a little habit, a little thing going. Might change it every once in a while.
Yeah.
If I saw him move, I'd say, I'd yell out. So the next time, if he took a pitch, geez, I better stay down. I got to remind myself to stay down.
Yeah.
He had a great year. He had 350.
Wow.
And, but, in other words, if he didn't hit the ball well, he'd come back right to me where I'd be sitting, and I'd always try to position myself so I'd be in a position where he could hear me, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Charlie Grimm always coached third base because the fans loved him out there. He was he just put on a show for them all the time.
That's when managers coached. Huh?
Yeah, they did.
They don't do that anymore. Yeah.
They're too brainy.
Yeah.
But anyway, he didn't hit the ball. He can write, geez, he ate me out.
It was your
fault. You're not looking. You're not watching. Well, Christ, were you? I did help for him because he didn't because he didn't hit the ball well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So I do have a record here in the of all of your home runs.
No kidding.
Six of them.
Did I?
Yeah, there's six home runs. You hit one off of Paul Derringer, Lefty Wallace, Van Mungo, Harry Feldman, Dick Morey, and Howie Fox.
Howie Fox?
Yeah.
Who was the other one?
He was with Cincinnati. Derringer was with Cincinnati. That was in 42.
I get a story on that one.
Lefty Wallace was...
He was the Braves.
Yeah.
I remember him right there at Braves Field.
Yeah.
But how many fellas can say they've been in a World Series for a non-entity ball player, for a ball player that was not a great ball player?
Yeah.
How many guys can say they've been in a World Series?
Yeah.
Not a star in a World Series, but was in a World Series. Hit a bases loaded home run off Paul Derringer, one of the greats. But I'm just saying a grand slam.
Yeah.
That was a grand slam off Paul Derringer. It should be.
It says two on here. I see a grand slam against Harry Feldman, but maybe they got it wrong.
No.
So they got the one against
Christ,
Derringer was a grand
Derringer
slam.
Derringer chased me all around the bases. You goddamn dago, you son of, I should have knocked you on your fanny.
All right, we're going to, okay, you're the authority, so maybe. You're right, okay. Wow.
And stole home a few times.
Wow.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something you can be a little proud of.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So,
Well, you know, I always tell the story. I don't know if it's true or not, but if you could check on that, I hit the grand slam off Paul Derringer.
Okay, we'll check that out, yeah.
And I always tell the story. It makes a good story at these places that I go to give a little talk.
Yeah.
And a few days later, they must have figured he was all done. If Marullo hit him a grand slam, he says, the Cubs want him, we'll trade him to him.
So,
and I always say, he helped us win the World Series.
You had an impact on his career, too.
Yeah.
But so I looked up your, they got some information on the web here, different sports things, and I looked you up.
Yeah.
And what it says about you, you know, gives your career record here, and it says, You tangled with Eddie Stanky of the Dodgers during a game. Oh. And then it mentions you accepted the challenge from Dixie Walker before the game. And it refers to those...
they remember me for two things in baseball.
Yeah.
Two things. One you know about. The four errors of one inning.
Yeah, I guess you nicknamed your son.
He was born. Boots? He was born that morning.
Yeah,
they went out to Braves Field and made four in one inning.
In front of the hometown crew.
Two balls.
You had a fielding error and a throwing error.
Throwing error, went out and intercepted a relay from Bill Nicholson, and then threw it over to the catcher's head.
Is that still a record?
It always will be.
It always will be.
No one will ever touch that one.
So I see you're famous for something else, yeah.
But now Eddie Stanky.
Yeah.
We were very friendly, I said, the year that he was with us.
Yeah.
And we were very close. And he always talked baseball. How are we gonna? In fact, we used to go out, the type of guy that it was, and it won him a World Series. This is exactly the way it happened. He was never a fast runner. In fact, he was a slow runner, a little guy with short stride. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what he would try to do is always, after attempt to steal a base, he'd always try to time it so he'd kick, slide in with a hook slide, and then keep this leg back, and then hit the fella here. I'll
kick the ball out of
you. Kick the ball out of the glove.
Yeah.
And if you remember right, in the 1951 World Series, I'm sitting there watching that. Phil Rizzuto against the Yankees, Brooklyn and the Yankees, or the Giants and the Yankees. It must have been Brooklyn and the Yankees, or whoever it was. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was,
All right.
Brooklyn,
Stealing second base.
Yeah.
Phil Rizzuto making the tag. He had plenty of time. But when you have too much time, you have a tendency to relax and wait for the guy to come in and tag himself.
Yeah.
And that's what Stanky would do purposely. Slow down just a little bit so you would relax. Then he came in with his other leg and he kicked the ball right out the right field. They scored the tie-in or the winning run.
Good baseball.
It was good baseball. Yeah. But he'd have me go out there. He'd have Bill Lee on the mound. Throwing from the mound because he was slow and deliberate, and Bill always liked to work on that big, slow motion delivery. Sheffing, catching. This is pre-games.
Yeah.
And sometimes after games.
Yeah.
I want to work on something.
Yeah.
Who's eligible? That's why he'd embarrass everybody.
Sure.
Always showing the skipper that he wants to do extra work. He said, I want to work on something. I need a catcher and I need a shortstop. Well, what the hell, he's my friend, I'm the shortstop.
Yeah.
Sheffing, obligated, Lee.
Yeah.
And he'd have you thrown to the catcher, and then he'd get on first base like stealing. And he would do time and time and time again.
Yeah.
And that's what he would do, work on this sliding, kick, and hitting.
That
type of slide they would do. Yeah. But you knew what he was trying to do after a while.
Yeah.
After a while, we knew what he was trying to do, so the ball wouldn't get knocked out of your hand because you just intentively.
Yeah, you can anticipate it. Yeah.
No, you anticipated it. Yeah. But that's what he tried.
Uh huh. I see. The other thing is, this book talks quite a bit about the what happened with Dixie Walker.
I have that book.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was Jackie Robinson, because you ended up playing
Robinson. I was one of the ones that they accused of almost causing a riot in Wrigley Field.
I read another book about it. It was a biography.
Even Jackie Robinson even mentioned something about one of the players that was antagonistic, as they put it.
Yeah.
Hey, he was a big, powerfully built guy. He was no little guy.
Yeah.
And I'm no big guy, and I'm not challenging anybody.
Right. You like to live,
But I was a scrapper.
Yeah.
I was a scrapper.
Well, you had to survive.
I was competitive.
Just for the record, the book we're referring to is Wrigleyville by Pete Rollenbach, which is...
Jackie Robinson, the particular play that I remember, it was in Wrigley Field, packed house, full house. Yeah. And they always warned Jackie, look, if you ever hit any problems, any confrontations out there, if anybody makes it a little tough, we want you turn around and head right for the dugout. Don't get into any of you, because that's what they will be trying to do.
Yeah.
And this is what Ricky, you know, challenged them to before in every game. You know all that.
Sure, sure. Oh, did. Yeah. Yeah, that's been well documented.
And Clyde Sukeforth would tell me more stories about, because he had something to do with Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, he just passed away.
What the young fellow went through.
Yeah. You know,
what he went through, the pre-game talking to.
Yeah.
But we had a pack house. Jackie Robinson's on the plate. Again, Bill Lee's the pitcher. Very deliberate, very slow. Big guy, big curveball. And, you know, a trait that Jackie Robinson had when he got on first base, he was a quick starter. He could get a jump.
Yeah, he was a good sprinter and everything, huh?
Yeah. He was a good runner.
Yeah.
Let's face it. And a big guy.
Yeah.
And a big guy. Well, he'd get on, but he was typical of a lot of a Blackstone.
Oh, yeah.
He put on a show over there. Well, that's part of their game.
Sure.
And he would antagonize the pitcher. And they'd get over there, just beat the throw easy there. Bill Lee was the pitcher, and you can just see Bill Lee at bothering Bill. He didn't want him to steal.
Yeah.
And still, when you're playing short or second, and you're down, you're up, you're waiting for the pitch, you're following the ball in there.
Yeah.
Now when you see he's going over to first base,
you relax,
You come up.
Ease up, yeah.
Now you're back again.
Yeah.
Oh, he's going. Now you're down again. Now you're back again. Now he takes off, steals base just like that. He's on second base.
Sure.
No outs.
Yeah.
Next man up, I don't remember who it was. Yeah. Is walked or whatever. Now there's a man in first and second. No outs. And we had the curveball pitch outplay. Bill Lee, good curveball pitcher. Bob Sheffing with a sure arm, accurate arm, and a quick arm, not the strongest arm. Clyde McCullough had the strongest arm to me in all of baseball for catches. We put on the curveball pitch out. Now, it's my job as a shortstop is give him a little room. Let him know you're off the...
Yeah.
A little bit, not holding him on as close. I should be holding him on. There's no outs.
Yeah.
So it's the man on second base, the runner. He's got to get the third on the sacrifice bunt. And the bunter is supposed to get the ball to the third baseman, let him field. So he so. But it's his to get that good break and get off of third base.
Yeah.
I know that. The pitcher knows that. The catcher knows that. So let's try the curveball pitch out.
Yeah.
So the curveball pitch out, the pitcher's job is to throw for the middle of the plate, sweep out, okay?
Yeah.
Sweep out. Now when the batter gets up, he sees the ball coming to the middle of the plate, gets the bat out there. When he sees the ball, well, he'll pull the bat back.
Sure.
But the runner sees the bat out there, and he gets that little lead. Then it's a curveball, not a fastball.
Yeah.
He gets hung up.
He's committed, yeah.
He's committed.
Yeah.
We had Jackie Robinson off by plenty.
Yeah.
Get a car. In this particular case, I'm waiting for him to come in, and he always came in head first. And then he came in, instead of me staying back on the bag, which I should have, I moved up a little bit because I had that much time. We had him that far off.
Wow, yeah.
I hadn't that much time. Well, that stopped his head first, slide back in the bag, and his leg came up and hit me on the shoulder. Well, when I tagged him, unconsciously or by just reaction, I tagged him a second time. Okay. That was my mistake, but it was not purpose.
Sure.
And I tagged him on the face when he came in.
Yeah.
And I hit him a second. Well, he got up with fire in his eyes, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
I was expecting anything to happen, but I was ready for anything to happen because, you know...
It was a tense situation,
Hey, we got him coming off second, we feel good, I get him tagged, and I did hit him twice, and I tagged him in the face. And fortunately, Jackie just grimaced a few times and said something. I don't know, but he turned right around right to the dugout.
Yeah.
But they say it, you know, could have caused a riot right then and there.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
I had to do was raise my hands. But fortunately, he didn't.
Yeah.
And he would have had every right to.
Sure.
It was just an ordinary play.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the whole incident.
Yeah.
But they made it look I was the villain.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, they're looking for
I wrapped them in the face twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Midway, and but anyway, we're in the cab. Going to go to Wrigley Field. Mo, his mother and dad, and a 17-year-old sister. And Midway, there's a lot of blacks coming out of the south side.
Yeah, the whole south side, It's a tough
section.
Yeah,
not the best neighborhood of Chicago. Yeah. And I don't know what made me say it. I knew that he had a date with the White Sox.
Yeah.
And I knew he had a date with Cleveland eventually.
Yeah.
And I knew we had a date with everybody was interested in this hard throwing right hander. So I just said to the cabbie, I said, cabbie, would you mind us driving by Comiskey Park before we get on the outer drive? And to Wrigley Field. He said, no problem at all. I knew they wouldn't be very impressed going that ride through there. And I could just look at the sister, his sister, 17. She was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't want any part of Chicago.
Sure.
No. Then we'll get on the outer drive.
Oh, yeah.
That's a beautiful drive at the Wrigley Field.
Up in Wrigley, yeah.
But they just said to Mo, you say yes or no, that's all. Yes or no, that's all we ask. And we'll make our written offer.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all. But I had gotten along with Mo and I became pretty good friends.
Yeah.
And they said, here's what we're going to do for you. We'll give you $50,000 and you tell us how you want it. You could pay it off, and I think in those days, 5 years or 3 years, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
But you tell us how you want it. See.
What years are we talking about now? Is this
56? I think it was 56.
Okay.
56.
Okay.
And he just thought about. He said, "Well, do you mind if my mom and dad are able to talk about it?" I said, "Of course, of course." By that time, I got out of there. You know.
Yeah,
when Beatty Himsel was there, Gene Loring was there, and what's his name, the general manager. And they signed right there on the desk.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you, what's his name? He never could understand how he could have signed with the Cubs instead of the Boston Braves.
Oh, Jones?
Jones.
Yeah.
Never could understand. And he was a nice man. I drove him. He couldn't drive for many years. I'd take him many places.
I'm sure
he said,
yay. Well, he won a few that you lost, too, I'm sure. So.
Oh, he signed so many players.
Yeah.
He would sign a player if you were interested in him.
Yeah.
He would know he had more bird dogs everywhere.
Yeah.
They're a great couple.
Who was your biggest regret? Did you that you couldn't sign, or
a lot of players that didn't. Yeah,
you sort of missed, or did you miss anybody? Miscalculator.
I can't think of some names. Player from Norwood, the third baseman.
Oh, Hebner, Richie Hebner.
Richie Hebner,
the Grave Digger.
And I know that the little guy was very interested in Pittsburgh, but I saw Richie Hebner as a catcher. He didn't run.
Yeah.
You got to run a little bit, but he was so cocky, he believed he could do everything. He's worse than his father, the gravedigger.
I think he's managing now, isn't he? Or he's
yeah, he's
coach
still in
or
baseball.
Something.
Yeah. I think in the Toronto organization for many, many, many. Yeah. He just believed, and you know who's just like him? Maloney, Lou Maloney.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, yeah. He believes he can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cocky, he's like that great quarterback that out of BC.
Flutie?
Still playing, Lou, yeah.
Flutie?
Flutie.
Yeah. Well, you need some of
he
that, right?
He believes he could, he was a good ball player, but his brother was a better one.
Darren? Is that right?
Darren.
Yeah. Well, they got
good
caught
second
up in the baseman, football.
Great actions.
Yeah.
I loved Flutie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's the nice thing, but his father's cockier than the two of them. He's a photographer. I was never in a small house. There wasn't 1 inch of space. There wasn't photos.
Didn't have to worry about paint, right? I mean, you just put a paint or wallpaper.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you have to respect and admire that in a person.
Well, Doug Flutie's still doing it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
So when did you retire?
When will I retire?
When did you? Are you still scouting?
Yeah.
Oh, you still do it?
Yeah. Still. Yeah.
Okay.
My wife's waiting for me to retire.
Oh, okay.
I feel most comfortable when I'm with baseball people, talking baseball. I can't wait to go out there and be amongst my.
Yeah.
Why? I think it's because I've earned their respect.
Yeah.
And they're glad to see me.
Yeah.
You know. And they say, hey, you always got a smile on your face, why? I said, I'm with baseball people. And just my nature. But it makes you feel good to be amongst people that you like.
Well, you got a good.
They like you.
You got a good track record, you know, and you see a lot.
I think I've earned that.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm having more trouble with my computer, Paul. I'm trying to learn that after all these years.
Yeah,
after
it's tough,
Almost 84 years old.
And yeah.
Fighting that thing up. I finally said to our man, the head up the bureau, who's a good baseball man, just a young fella. I said to him, you know, I felt like I've worked behind all year, always behind. I'm not like that. I'm usually with it.
Yeah.
I think it's possibly, mostly because I'm spending too much time on my computer, trying to do the right thing. There's things about it I don't understand. He said, Lenny, look, you earned it. Go back to your old way.
Right. If it worked before, you know.
You write clearly. You print beautifully.
Yeah.
Go back to your old way.
Yeah.
But you want to do what the others are doing, and I spend too much time. But slowly, I'm getting around to it. But you run into a roadblock. Do you use a computer much?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, at work. Yeah, I had troubles too.
What type of work do you do?
I'm an engineer, so
that's what I figured.
I'm more on a managerial side now, so
good.
I hire people and that sort of thing. And
good for you.
So,
what type of engineering?
It's research and development. I'm with this company.
I said we have.
Yeah. Same
people.
Thing. Same type
Same
of thing.
Right? I can't understand how they can be. And I met some wonderful guys like you. Now, where are you located?
Well, we're right next to MIT. We used to be part of MIT.
Oh.
So we're
high tech. Oh, that's it.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi, excuse me. I just had to grab something.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh.
Yeah. So, still having fun. Yeah. We hire a lot of young kids. And
we signed a boy out of MIT this year.
I saw that. Yeah, he was pretty good.
Good job.
Yeah.
He's from Texas.
Yeah, yeah, that's a surprise. That's the first.
But he's on the ROTC program.
Right, yeah.
And the Cubs signed him on.
They offered to pay for his scholarship, didn't they? His education to pay the Air Force for his education so he can get out of it.
Yeah. They went for it.
Yeah, they did go for it?
Well, that's what they had to do something like that to get him signed.
Oh, yeah.
They signed him.
Yeah, good.
And the ROTC was the biggest obstacle.
Yeah, well, let's see how.
And he wanted to play. I interviewed him right there at MIT a couple of times at the Hyatt.
Oh yeah, yeah, right on the right on the river.
Yeah,
right
on the river.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good. Oh. Yeah, that's a surprise because they're not noted for their baseball
engineers.
Stuff, but, yeah. Well, he's
although
got
we signed a kid out of there years ago, should have been a big leaguer, Alan Dupfel from Brockton, many years ago.
Yeah.
You go see him one day, great fastball. He goes to the next day, great curveball, but never both at the same time.
I see.
But he was a...
Yeah.
He'd always say to me, he said, Mr. Morrow, don't look at me as an engineer.
Yeah.
I'm in management. So his studies were in management.
Okay, yes. They do have...
In the engineering field.
Yeah, engineering's only one part of the school. They get into a lot of they get into movies and liberal arts and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So,
where'd you go to school?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
So
I used to go watch the Bisons there all the time. Phil Cavaretta was the manager there in the.
Who was his first baseman?
I remember Luke Easter being the first baseman.
Big Luke.
Big Luke. Yeah, Luke. Yeah.
See, I covered the league when Phil was managing.
Yeah, Luke was, he could crush them
all. Oh.
Jeez. Yeah, he's a monster of a guy, yeah.
The pickle factory or something. Yeah. The story. He owned a pickle factory or something.
I think in Cleveland, yeah.
In Cleveland.
Yeah, unfortunately, he was killed. And,
I didn't know that.
Luke Easter, yeah, they were trying to, I guess...
I might have forgotten about it.
Some guys were trying to rob a place or something like that where he was, and I think he tried to stop them or something like that.
Oh, yes, now I
remember. Yeah, he was fairly young man, yeah. But,
boy, he could...
Yeah.
Luke Easter, and who's that good dang big first baseman for the... They hit a ball harder than anybody I ever knew for the Giants.
McCovey. Oh, yeah.
Willie McCovey.
Yeah.
And you and I have seen a lot of guys that can hit the ball, but
yeah.
Nobody hit a ball harder than either one of those two guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you think the Cubs are going in the right direction? They're making a lot of changes this year. And,
I hope so, because they got good people in there running the thing, trying to run the thing. And that's the problem. You keep rooting for them because you get to know the people that are running. I don't know them personally, except the young general manager. I knew him and his two fathers ahead of him. McPhails.
McPhails. Yeah.
They're good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Wrigley Field. That's a tremendous place to watch a game. God, it's so beautiful.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, I'm one of these guys, if I get a letter,
yeah.
I realize I'm the lost, what do you call it, that you might say. They've got everybody else, they knew who else was on that 45 team, but who the hell was a shortstop? No-name guy. Finally they find out, and finally get my address, and I get the nicest letter.
Uh-huh.
Please sign this. I was always an admirer of the Cubs and so forth.
Yeah.
I'll answer everyone the same way. Thanks for making an old time feel good.
Yeah.
And best wishes with your hobby, and glad to know you're a Cubs fan, so forth. Invariably, I'll get an answer back.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get gifts. I get gifts you wouldn't believe from people I haven't met yet.
Oh.
But I've been corresponding with for years.
Yeah.
I've got one fella, he's Ken Renz. The name is Ken Renz, and he's the associate principal of the big Magnet High School just outside of Chicago, or it's in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's a big, big school. We have to take exams to get into it.
Yeah.
He is. And every time he gets a letter from me, he posts it in the English class, and he makes a project out of it for the different kids, and he'll even have the kids write to me. I don't mind it, you know. But
yeah.
But he's a real Cubs fan.
Uh-huh.
Oh. He's going to send you, show you a couple of things he has.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got these for my daughter for Christmas.
Okay.
The Legends of Baseball stamps.
I'm not showing you anything new, but...
Yeah.
just to show you. Now, this came in this one box.
So people just send these to you? And
this is one guy.
One guy?
Ken Renz.
Uh-huh.
The associate principal.
Yeah.
You've seen all these things.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see this. Oh, postcards. Oh, this is great.
Look at this.
Yeah. Ah.
A little.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A little, yeah.
Frame.
Yeah. Wow. Fantastic. Huh. What's nice of people.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Think that's nice.
But
that
I have another fella.
Yeah.
Oh, he sends me stuff constantly.
Yeah.
I have another fella that I don't know where. He told me one time he looks for old newspapers.
Yeah.
And he travels a lot. He looks for old newspapers. And then he puts them. The first thing I got from him was Rob Stanley, Lansing, Illinois, 18028 Bonham Avenue,
yeah.
Or something like that. He sent me a newspaper, asked me to sign it.
It's coming up. Yeah.
Asked me to sign it.
Yeah.
And send it back to him.
Yeah.
And I sent a letter with it.
Yeah.
And then he says, now this is what I'd like to do for you, for being so kind.
Uh-huh.
And doing. And he also said to Bill Dickelson and others like that. But he looked for different articles that were very positive of a game that you might have had. He said, will you send that back to me? See where I signed it? And I think, who was that? Was it Bill?
Bill Swish Nicholson,
Len
Marillo,
All right, Swish Nicholson.
Yeah.
It was a good game that I had. He said, send it back to me. Here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to frame it, and I'll have a picture of you, and I'll cut it out in there so you can.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Oh, that's terrific.
So anybody says I couldn't hit, I just show them this article.
Wow.
But I should have it.
Yeah.
Posted somewhere. But
yeah.
My sons will use it somewhere.
Yeah. Wow.
And this. Rob Stanley, where was it? Same fella. Sent me this. This just came for Christmas. That was maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. Did you ever meet him?
No.
No?
No.
Wow, that's great. That's you and your grandson, huh?
Yeah, but what he's done with that one newspaper, that's 1942.
Yeah, Sox Wind. Wow.
Now this.
Oh, here's an article. Yeah. About your grandson.
About he's incorporated that. Now here's that game off of Derringer, I think.
Or triple three-run homer. Right. By his triple three-run homer.
Oh, it's a three-run homer.
Yeah.
I thought it was a grand slam.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Well, I make it sound better.
That's against Derringer, right? Yeah. Wow, that's great.
He said, here it is, 11/22. I hope you're doing well. This is a little something I hope you and your family get a kick out of. I've been meaning to send it to you for a while. Take care. I hope you're still enjoying it.
Yeah, it's from May 30th, 1942, Saturday, May 30th. Yeah, the Chicago Daily Tribune.
But isn't it nice to have?
Oh, geez, that's great. Wow.
Yeah. But to go to that trouble. To do that.
Yeah, it's laminated. And give up a picture of you and your grandson.
And give up a newspaper like that.
Wow. Jeez. Well,
that's priceless.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, it's nice that people think of you like that, and, you know.
Well, I think it's just
Cub fans are diehard fans, you know.
Right, but I think it pays to be a good guy. You know,
well, you get back what you give out, you know.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And I'm reading a book by Detroit Free Press baseball writer Mitch
Album. Tuesdays with Maury.
Tuesdays.
I read it. Tremendous book, you know.
Everybody.
I gave it to my kids and my wife, and I said, read this book. You got to read it.
That's what I'm telling my
whole
family.
I give it to my friends, you know.
But every chapter is a lesson in life.
Oh, exactly.
Just
exactly.
Like a visit with a teacher who can give you so much.
Oh,
isn't it something?
Yeah,
and I'm not a reader. I'm, you know, Baseball America, Sporting News, and things like that. But I can't get into a book. I fall right to sleep. But something like this.
I mean,
even it's two chapters at a time.
It's a short book, but you get so much out of it. Yeah,
but
it's really.
Mitch coming every Tuesdays to visit with his old professor.
Yeah,
like that.
And it's turned his life around.
He must make notes.
Yeah,
you know, on his way.
Yeah,
I haven't finished it.
Yeah,
I haven't finished.
Oh, it's tremendous. Yeah,
I'm purposely taking my time because I'll go back chapter after chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going into the, which is quite a thing. They're having the Cape Cod League first Hall of Fame.
Oh.
January 20th.
Uh huh.
Next month, and I'm one of the fellas that are going to go in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And we're having Mo Vaughn who's coming in.
Yeah.
The big first baseman for the White Sox.
Frank Thomas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But fellas like that, plus some old fellas.
Are they they're ex-Cape Cod Leaguers, right?
Mo Vaughn. Their first Hall of Fame. They're trying
to
make a big thing. And it's going to be a big thing. You've got Chatham Bars in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice dinner on January 20th.
Good.
So, anyway, I'm keeping making little checks and little remarks about what Mitch says about his old professor, his lessons to him. I said, because I want to say the right thing at this dinner.
Sure.
And if I can pick out, there's so many little things you can say and sit down quick.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Just mentioned Mitch Abon. What's the Mitch?
Album. Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking.
So, what's your prediction for the Red Sox for this year? Are you predicting they're gonna break the jinx, or
you know, being in baseball all my life, and every time a ball player, Baseball America this week, did you see that? Who's on the cover? Carlos Pena is on the front page.
Oh, he is? From Haverhill?
On the cover.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I didn't see the latest one. I saw the last one.
Well, you'll see this, but what the...
Yeah.
I mean, just the way they word it, he's not only their top prospect, but he's more than that to the organization.
Yeah.
He's such a human being and a great... Tremendous, handles himself beautifully.
Yeah, from everything I heard about him, whole family is really great.
Your father. Marullo Tajano, that's what he calls me.
When
are you going to come up and have the beans? You know, their favorite dinner is a bean dinner.
Right, yeah.
When are you going to come up and have the beans? Yeah,
he was in the Texas Rangers this past year, I think.
And he's done well. He's a good
They project him in a couple years.
Yeah.
But...
Paul, this other boy that the Red Sox just got, Ramirez from
Cleveland.
I got a call from.
I read the article by Steve Buckley.
I got a call from Steve. Yeah. You saw that.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, the article.
And Steve is a good friend of mine. He always has me in that old timers game, and Johnny Pesky or somebody like that.
Oh yeah.
And he has all these kids from the Park Lake play.
Right, there's All-Star Game.
In 2 years, they've raised over $50,000.
Yeah, he had...
Old-timers game.
Who's played in it? Montalbano played in that. The pitcher from, was it Northeastern?
Northeastern, they get...
Oh, did they have Azadarian? Did he play in that or not? No.
No.
No, these are all local kids, right?
Well, Pagliarulo comes in, plays the old-timer.
Yeah.
He comes in, puts on a good show for him.
Yeah.
But Buckley, they raised over $50,000. Wow. Last year for the diabetic Joslin Clinic, and the year before that was Rosie's Place.
Yeah. Wow, that's
Well, they have a lot of donations
of
come in, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, Buckley called me, and he says, you've been around a long time. You have anything, Ramirez? He says, you're sitting down? He said, why? I said, I might have something that might be interesting for you. He says, like what? He said, did you ever see him play? I said, well, I've got a report on him that I turned on him when he was a sophomore in high school, going in his junior. He says, stay here. He said, I'm sitting. So yeah. I asked him if he had a fax machine. He says, yeah.
So you faxed
him? I said, but don't use my name. But anyway.
Yeah, the money is really just mind-boggling, you know. And I'm not sure it's for the better of the game, you know. I mean, it costs you a fortune to go see the Red Sox now. And
this money situation, they got to do something about it. There's got to be an answer to it. There's a kid that, all right, he's got a lot of talent. He had a great year last year, but if I'm an owner of a ball club, I expect to make money.
Yeah.
I expect to make money. And I'm the guy that's got all the money out that's sacrificing all this money.
Sure.
It's my business.
And right.
Now, don't tell me what my business is and how to run my business. It's my business. I'm going to get the right guys to run it. And hope to make money. That's the way Mr. Wrigley always looked at it.
Yeah.
It's a business.
Yeah.
It's a sports, but it's a business. If we make money, we'll spend it. If we don't make money, that's what he always believed in.
Yeah.
And if we have to repair the ballpark, put money in the ballpark, we'll do that. We never got 1 cent bonus all the years I worked for the Cubs.
Hmm.
And that was many, many years.
Yeah, yeah.
Never got 1 cent bonus. But it all went to good. You know, Wrigley Field has been replaced from one brick to the next.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah.
You know, it has been,
I
and he's kept
you.
It right
it's
up.
It's in immaculate condition. Yeah. What's your favorite baseball story? Do you have something?
I don't know, you just mentioned something.
Okay.
Like Ramirez, there's a story on Ramirez. And, you know.
What about Babe Ruth's bat? You know, you have Babe Ruth's bat, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, you got to pay for that. I don't tell that for free.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah, every once in a while someone say, hey, I hear you get Ty Cobb's bat. Really? You got that? And I see it. I said, no, nobody touches that. I do this to them. Cost you money.
I see.
I do. Yeah. Oh, you never heard that story?
I did. Yes, I did. Sure. Yeah. That's why I brought it up. I caught it when you spoke in Worcester. That one time was really great.
Yeah. But that's a true story. That's what makes it good. Don Johnson just died.
Yes,
he gave
I just
me the
saw
bat.
That. Yeah. Is there?
He just passed away.
Yeah.
You saw that.
That was your second baseman. Yeah. I saw that in the Globe.
Well, his father, Ernie, is the one that took the bat after Babe Ruth hit the 50th home run and took it home with him. And he just said, according to Don, his father said, I just said to the Babe, Babe's okay if I have the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. it wasn't what today, the memorabilia.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah, like all Mark McGuire's home runs and all that sort of thing, so.
I've never told a story about the Yastrzemski. I get a Yastrzemski bat, but I don't really show the Yastrzemski. He's too modern.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, Babe Ruth. I mean, you know, he's... Okay. I guess that's about it. I appreciate it. I want to take your picture.
Oh.
You know, and I want you to autograph my book.
Hope you got something.
Oh, this was really terrific. Yeah, I appreciate
but
it.
But anytime you feel
I'm
like
sure,
talking baseball, you know where I'm at.
I think on behalf of Sabre, you know, I want to, you know, thank
well,
you because
they're
sure
a great
they're
group.
They're all going
to
appreciate
I was up
it.
In Vermont one year.
Yeah.
Sabre group.
Oh, yeah, they have a chapter up there.
And they
had
a chapter, and it was in the old buildings now, which is part of St. Michael's College.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in an artist's studio, and the artist was Lance Richburg, who was a great baseball artist. He was the artist that painted a lot of those action photos. Well known. You see him on baseball cards and things like that.
Yeah.
Lance Richburg, just like the outfielder with the Braves many years ago. We had an outfielder,
uh-huh.
Lance Richburg. This is Lance Richburg Jr., artist, in his studios.
Uh-huh.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Just a small group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have too many major leaguers from Vermont.
We have a lawyer in Burlington, Vermont, where I spent 2 summers.
Yeah.
Tom
Simon. Simon, right. You know, he's the head of the...
Is he head of the chapter up there?
Yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he organized it, yeah.
And there's another man I met. He lives just outside of Burlington. Has a goat farm.
Mm-hmm.
And his son is an architect in the state of Washington,
mm-hmm.
who built the richest man in the world.
Oh, Bill Gates?
Bill Gates' home.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's an architect himself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
He didn't tell me, but one of the other
men. Yeah, so yeah.
He spent a lot of time out there.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Working on that.
Yeah.
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 Interesting people. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let me take your picture, if you don't mind. That's fine. Yeah. And what I'm going to do is, hang on. Let me get another one.
You know, we had a flock of turkeys around here for the past 2 weeks.
Oh, you did? Wild turkeys?
A flock of them right up on my garage roof. Yeah.
That could be nasty.
That's what they tell me.
Wild turkeys,
but
yeah.
These were so used to having people near them.
Because
the neighbors were all over the place.
We had some in the next town over, and I guess they were crossing the road or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
The guy stopped his car and he tried to shush him along and all that sort of thing. They started attacking him, you know.
Yeah, they said
they can be nasty because
they
can
really peck away at you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I hope this worked out.
This is great.